It is February 5th, and today we're going to finish up chapter 1 with short-term investments. We'll discuss the assignments for short-term investments. We then are going to create our sample portfolio together. And what else? And also we have to discuss being a trader versus an investor. And that's what we're going to do. Start with that today. And then, if we have a lot of time, which we won't, we're ready to start mutual funds. But that's Thursday. Who's got a good joke? Anybody got a good joke? Oh, you do. And your name again is Audrey? No. Kathleen. Okay. Can't create a hostile environment. All right?
Okay.
Okay, let's hear. Wow.
What do you get when you cross a dyslexic, an insomniac, and an agnostic?
Somebody who stays awake all night wondering whether or not there is a dog. A dyslexic, insomniac, agnostic. So they stay awake all night wondering whether there is a dog. Because I have dyslexia. That's a good question. A good joke. You have to remember that joke. It's a good joke. I have a few of those cross things. What do you get when you cross this and that? So.
I was like,
yeah, because dyslexic switch things around. And the dog is my co-pilot. Okay, so we took a look at last week what are reasonable expectations. And we said for us, you know, commoners, yeah, I hope you do a lot better. In fact, I'm hoping you do at least 10, 11, 12%. That would be so cool. But you hear people making tons of money. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, sure, there are people who do that. But they are not investors. They may call themselves investors, but they are speculators. They are traders. T-R-A-D-E-R-S, not traders like President Trump, but Pinche Trump, but traders with a D. And so, as we said, the speculator is not an investor. They're trying to sell low, buy high. They're not looking at it as a long-term commitment. And you may decide that that's what you want to do. That might be something you want to aspire to. But as we warned you last week, you're up against the best in the business. And so this is a... Oh, yeah, you're going to get one of those. And the two gentlemen who came in... You already got one, right, Eric? You already got one of these?
I do.
Yeah, okay, here's Salvador. Okay. There are many other examples of this, but one of the best examples is John Goodfreund, and I'll say good friend because it's easier than saying Goodfreund, which is German for good friend, and John Merriweather. Okay, so this is a little story to start your day. And this is Michael Lewis, by the way. Michael Lewis is a phenomenal writer. Anything he writes, you want to read. Flash Boys... This book, Liar's Poker, and then he's written several others, but he's an excellent writer. Okay, so it was sometime early in 1986, the first year of the decline of my firm, Solomon Brothers, our chairman, John Goodfreund, left his desk at the head of the trading floor and went for a walk. At any given moment on the trading floor, billions of dollars were being risked by bond traders. Goodfreund took the pulse of the place by simply wandering around and asking questions of the traders. An eerie sixth sense guided him to wherever a crisis was unfolding. Goodfreund seemed able to smell money being lost. And so he talks about how he would scare the living daylights out of his traders. And it said, you felt the chill in your bones that I imagine belongs to the same class of intelligence as the nervous twitch of a small furry animal at the silent approach of a grizzly bear. Often as not, our chairman just hovered quietly for a bit and then left. This day in 1986, however, Goodfreund did something strange. Instead of terrifying us all, he walked a straight line to the trading desk of John Merriweather, a member of the board of Solomon Brothers and our best bond trader. He whispered a few words. The traders in the vicinity eavesdropped. What Goodfreund said has become a legend at Solomon Brothers and a visceral part of its corporate identity. He said, one hand, $1 million, no tears. One hand, $1 million, no tears. Meriwether grabbed the meaning instantly. The King of Wall Street, as Business Week had dubbed Good Friend, wanted to play a single hand of a game called Liar's Poker for $1 million. He played the game most afternoons with Meriwether and the six young bond arbitrage traders. Arbitrage is a fancy way of saying you make money right away, you buy something and sell it immediately, who worked for Meriwether, and he was usually skinned alive. Some traders said that Good Friend was just heavily outmatched. Others who couldn't imagine Good Friend as anything but omnipotent, and there were many, said that losing suited his purposes, though exactly what that might be was a mystery. The peculiar feature of Good Friend's challenge this time was the size of the stake. Normally, the bets didn't exceed a few hundred dollars. Now, you got to know, this is New York, this is 1980s, and a few hundred dollars for them, you know, they used to go out for lunch and that would be $50, and dinner would be a couple hundred dollars. So it's a different world. You know, when you go there, it's very expensive to live in New York, and they make a lot of money, but they spend a lot of money. Normally, the bets didn't exceed a few hundred dollars. $1 million was unheard of. The final two words of the challenge, no tears, meant that the loser was expected to suffer a great deal of pain, but wasn't entitled to whine, bitch, or moan about it. He'd just have to hunker down and keep his poverty to himself. But why? You might ask, if you were anyone other than the King of Wall Street, why do it in the first place? Why in particular challenge Meriwether instead of some lesser managing director? It seemed an act of sheer lunacy because Meriwether was the king of the game. There's plenty of room over here. The Liar's Poker champion of the Solomon Brothers trading floor. Okay, so now he talks about it. Meriwether had made hundreds of millions of dollars for Solomon. He had the rare ability, treasured by traders, to hide his state of mind. You know, it's a good poker player, right? Okay, he was always, Good Friend was always the outsider in the game. So now, okay, so how he talks about what is Liar's Poker. Anybody play this game, Liar's Poker? It's various incarnation. A group of people, as few as two, as many as 10, form a circle. Each player takes a dollar bill out of their pocket and holds it close to his chest. Each player attempts to fool the others about the serial numbers printed on the face of his dollar bill. One trader begins making a bid. He says, three sixes. He means that all told, including other people's dollar bills, there's at least three sixes in the group. Once the first bid has been made, and there's a couple spaces up here, one right here, come on up. The game moves clockwise in a circle. Let's say the bid is three sixes. The player to the left can do one of two things. He can bid higher. He can say, you know, three sevens. Or he can do four fives. He can bid more cards, more numbers of a lower number. Or he can challenge. He can say, you know, I think you're full of it. You don't have it. Room over there, Nick. The bidding escalates until all other players agree to challenge a single player's bid. Then and only then do the players reveal their serial numbers and determine who is bluffing whom. In the midst of all this, the mind of a good player spins with probabilities. What is the statistical likelihood of there being three sixes with a batch of, say, 40 randomly generated serial numbers? For a great player, however, the math is the easy part of the game. The hard part is reading the faces of the other players. The complexity arises when all the players know how to bluff and double bluff. The game has some of the feel of trading, just as jousting has some of the feel of war. The question a Liar's Poker player asks himself are, up to a point, the same question a bond trader asks himself. Is this a smart risk? Do I feel lucky? How cunning is my opponent? Does he have any idea what he's doing? And if not, how do I exploit his ignorance? If he bids high, is he bluffing, or does he actually have a strong hand? Is he trying to induce me to make a foolish bid, or does he actually have the four of a kind himself? Each player seeks weaknesses, predictabilities, and patterns in the others and seeks to avoid it in himself. The bond traders are Goldman Sachs, First Bargain, Boston, Morgan Stanley, Merrill Lynch, and the other Wall Street firms all play some version of Liar's Poker. But the place where the stakes run highest, thanks to John Meriwether, is the New York bond trading floor of Solomon Brothers. The code of the liar's poker player was something like the code of the gunslinger. It required a trader to accept all challenges. Because of the code, which was his code, Merriweather felt obliged to play. But he knew it was stupid. For him, there was no upside. If he won, he upset Goodfriend, his boss. No good came of this. But if he lost, he was out of pocket $1 million. That was worse than upsetting his boss. Although Merriweather was by far the better player of the game, in a single hand, anything could happen. Luck could very well determine the outcome. Merriweather spent his entire day avoiding dumb bets, and he wasn't about to accept this one. "No, John," he said. "If we're going to play for those kind of numbers, I'd rather play for real money. $10 million, one hand, no tears." $10 million. It was a moment for all the players to savor. Merriweather was playing liar's poker before the game even started. He was bluffing, of course. Goodfriend considered the counterproposal. It would have been just like him to accept. Merely to entertain the thought was a luxury that must have pleased him well. It is good to be rich. On the other hand, $10 million was and is a lot of money. If Goodfriend lost, he'd have only $30 million or so left. His wife, Susan, was busy spending the better part of $15 million redecorating their Manhattan apartment. Merriweather knew this. And as Goodfriend was the boss, he clearly wasn't bound by the Merriweather code. Who knows? Maybe he didn't even know the Merriweather code. Maybe the whole point of his challenge was to judge Merriweather's response. Even Goodfriend had to marvel at the king of action. So Goodfriend declined. In fact, he smiled his own brand of forced smile and said, "You're crazy." "No," thought Merriweather and all the bond traders on the Solomon Brothers trading floor, "just very, very good." So you ready to go up against John Merriweather? Anyone? I don't think so. And if you are, then I'm going to do my best to help you, but I really can't. Because I'm not a trader. Anytime I've tried to do short-term trades, they've fallen. Well, they really weren't meant to be short-term trades, but they've fallen on their butts. Any questions? Any thoughts? Cool? Just because you and I can't hit a little white ball 300 yards in three shots down the fairway doesn't mean there's people who can't. And that's what we're talking about here. Did it make any sense? Questions? It's really quiet. He's really quiet, I think. What's going on? Okay, because we're done with our discussion of the overview of investments and the risk versus return. And now we're ready to go through short-term investments. Boring. A place to park your money. We saw that we could lose 30, 40, 50% in any one given year in the stock market, right? So if we need this money, do we put it in stocks? If we need it in the we need the money in the short term.
No.
Everyone should say no. If we need the money in the short term, do we put the money in stock?
No.
No, because it's just not smart. I mean, you need this $10,000 to live off of for the next year or so because whatever, you know, this is whatever, $8,000 or whatever you got from financial aid, or you're putting money down for a down payment on a house. This is a place to park your money. And we call short-term vehicles, short-term investments, cash. It's not really money sitting under your mattress, but that's what it's referred to. And again, we normally in the financial world and in the accounting world, short term is anything up to a year, but I tend to take a little longer time frame. Usually guaranteed or pretty darn close, very, very liquid. Get your money right away, very low risk or almost no risk of losing your principal. Hence, very low reward. We should probably change this to 1 to 3%, but someday it'll come back up. And for many years, and even paying close to zero. Now they're starting to rise. You're starting to see savings accounts at 2% or more, money market accounts. We're going to see treasury bills. And we'll also quickly discuss the emergency fund, the idea of an emergency fund. Now, there are two ways of earning interest with short-term investments. This is the way that we're normally used to, the nominal rate, the stated rate. You see a savings account and they're advertising 1%. We have $100, and at the end of the year, we'll have $101. But the other way is called the discount rate. And this is more common with more complex, I shouldn't use the word complex, but just not out of the ordinary short-term investments for people. The interest accrues on the investment. You like that word, accrues? That's something you go on a ship, you go on a cruise. Thank you, Kathleen, for bringing a good joke. So, now, this is a word you'll see in accounting when they accrue interest or accrue whatever. And so you bought this entity, treasury bill, corporate paper, whatever it is, for $5,000. Well, really, you didn't pay that much. What you paid was $4,800. And then as it gets closer and closer and closer to maturity, and we're going to see this, you'll find that the value gets closer and closer until, and finally, it matures on a certain date, and you get your $5,000. You see that? So the interest is the difference, between what you paid for it and what it is redeemed for. All right? So now, what's the risk? Is there a big risk of default? No. Everyone wants to say no. Wait till I ask you. Is there a big risk of default? No. No. In fact, your principal is guaranteed often or pretty darn close. You're not going to lose money. But every investment, it doesn't matter what it is, has some kind of risk. Now, when we think of short-term investments, we always think, oh, no risk. Well, no, there are risks. They're a little harder to quantify. You could be losing purchasing power. If you have a 1% savings account and inflation's running at 2%, is your money going up in value? Well, nominally, yeah. And next year you have $101, but that same $101 only buys $99 and whatever, 2 cents of value. So your money is losing value. And opportunity cost. Who's the economics folks in here? I know, here's one, right? Here's another one. Opportunity cost, we'll see this. We'll show you this when we get to mutual funds. It's the trade-off. It's what you give up by making a decision. And it's kind of hard to quantify, and economists love it. But most people just go, huh? But the fact that we put $500,000 into a savings account for 20 years means we lost a tremendous amount of opportunity. We could have chose any of a few other or many other options and done a whole lot better. And we'll see that when we get the mutual fund. Okay, so, oh, yes. Repeat after me. There is no such thing.
As
a risk-free investment.
As a risk-free investment.
Yeah, every investment has risks. Now, of course, when we think of risk, we often think of losing money, but not in the case of short-term investments. Okay, so, deposit accounts. When we bring our money to the bank, is it safe? Everyone should say yes. Is our money safe at the bank?
Yes.
It is guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. of A., whether it's through a bank, that's the FDIC, or a credit union, that's the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. If it's the credit union, it's National Credit Union Association, NCUW. So there are savings accounts. They're actually called passbook savings accounts, but nobody, actually some credit unions still offer these things. They still offer, it looks like a passport. Legally, they'll call them savings accounts. But when you go to your credit union, legally it's called a share account. And then a checking accounts that pay interest are called negotiable order of withdrawal accounts. But nobody calls them that. They just call them checking accounts that pay interest. And then if you go to a bank or a credit union, they also have what's called a money market deposit account. Now, this is different. We're going to see a money market mutual fund. There's a couple of spaces, folks. You want to give them a space right there? Or right over there? Yeah, okay. excuse me. So, and they're meant to look exactly the same as a money market mutual fund. They started a mutual fund, and the banks and the credit unions said, so we can do that too. They are offered by banks and credit unions. They are all called demand accounts since the funds are available behind demand. They provide the highest level of liquidity and are usually guaranteed up to $250,000. Now, if you walk into the, did we say this last week? You walk into the credit union bank and say, I want my $77,000. Will they give it to you? Well, they'll say, yeah, sure, you know, it's your money. We'll write you a cashier's check and you can take it to your financial institution. What if you ask for it in cash? Yeah, so we'll come back tomorrow. Because they don't have that much. Well, a few branches, usually in a very high, you know, economic area, right downtown or something like that. But no, most branches don't have $70,000, $7,000 in cash lying around. So they have to order it, and it'll come back tomorrow, and then they'll call the FBI. Huh? Why do they do that? Well, that's what people say, $10,000. But the reality is that there's no set limit. $10,000 is a good number, but there's no set limit. This is bizarre stuff, folks. If the bank suspects that it's a suspicious transaction, they are required to contact the proper authorities. Now, $10,000 is a good number. Some people say $5,000. But there's no set number. And so the bank is sort of, because they're on the hook if this person turns out to be a terrorist or an anarchist or a drug dealer or a politician or whatever it is, these nasty people. And so it's really kind of scary as far as I'm concerned, because then the bank is not allowed to tell you. The bank is not allowed to tell you. And so we tell this to the 121, we tell this to you folks. And I've had a couple of students come up to me and say, well, what do? My mother has saved, you know, a ton of money, and she's hidden it, and we can't get her to put it in the bank, and now she's kind of thinking that she wants to put it in the bank, but we don't know what to do. And I said, I don't know what to do either. So I called the FBI, and I told them the situation, and they finally got me to a retired agent who still did some work. And he said, just deposit it. We see this. Don't be cute. Don't bring in $9,000, you know, for 5 days. Just bring in the money and deposit it and be done with it. So, especially because in Mexico, this is part of the culture. They don't trust the banks. Can anybody relate? They don't. Well, with good reason, right? Two times the banks stabbed them in the back, and so many in that culture just don't trust the banks. So. Trust your bank, trust your credit union, because if they fall down, doesn't matter where your money is. Okay, now, savings bonds. These things you can buy pretty much anywhere, any financial institution, bank or credit union. They are pretty boring. They work at the accrual, they work on the discount method. You buy these things for $50, and a million years later, they're $100. Maybe 20 years later, something like that. They don't pay income tax if you redeem them for higher education. So some of you probably have these things sitting in a drawer somewhere that your aunt or your grandparent gave you when you were born. Go ask your parents, did I ever get any savings bonds? Because now's the time to use them. And you use them to pay for Southwestern College expenses, no taxes. There's no state or local taxes. We don't have an income tax here locally, but we have in California. California can't tax the feds. The states, that's part of the Constitution. There's some ways they get around it. The states and the local governments can't tax the feds. The feds can't tax the state and local governments. So because it's issued by the federal government, it is not taxable at the state level. So they're a popular gift for newborns. The problem is people put them in the bottom of a drawer and forget about them, and then 30 years later, they go, oh, my goodness. So check it out. You with me? Ask your parents if you have any of these things lying around. Now, the HH bonds are being phased out. They are the nominal way. They pay interest. But you can no longer purchase these. But these things are getting more and more popular, especially after the Great Recession. People were convinced that inflation was going to skyrocket, even though the economists were saying, no, you don't understand. We're looking at deflation. We're looking at people losing their homes and housing prices falling. We're losing to look at people losing their jobs and wages falling. We need to pump up the economy. And people, no, you're giving billions of dollars to the banks. We're going to have inflation. And they were wrong, of course, but no, everything changes. It might happen. But these things are indexed to inflation. So they're issued at face value, and they're guaranteed to outpace inflation, but not by much. They pay accrued interest on the bond's maturity, and again, they're free of taxes if you use them for higher education. So they're popular with people who are concerned about inflation. But you notice that people who are concerned about inflation are also interested in gold and other things like that, which, you know, barely beat inflation over time, as we saw last week. Now, treasury bills. This is the one you're going to do some research. This is your part of your assignments, treasury bills. We talked about these just briefly last week. They are generally regarded as the safest of all instruments, and this is where we go to get the risk-free rate of return, realizing that that means risk-free of default. They're not going to lose the value. They work on the discount method, and they are 1 month, 3 month, 6 month maturities. So you buy them at a discount, you redeem them at face value. And this is the cool thing. When the government screws up, we like to jump at them, right, and yell at them. But when they do something very cool, we want to reward them. So if you got your packet, one of your assignments, Oops. Where did it go? What page? Okay. Page. What happened there? Oh, I think I did. I put it on books to read. It's the very last page. The very last page. Your assignment. Your assignment is to go to treasurydirect.gov. And so let's take a look. Let's take a look at treasurydirect.gov.
Was that on the syllabus, the back
page? Yeah, the very back page of the handout I gave you last week. You don't have it?
I have it.
Okay, get the three-ring. Come and get a three-ring binder. I got extra three-ring binders. Get a three-ring binder. Put it in there. You got to get organized. That's important. So you need... Okay, this is my last one. Okay. So let's go to Treasury Direct. Look, it even knows. Hey, you want to go to treasurydirect.gov? Go away. Okay. Why didn't it go to treasurydirect.gov? I hate when they try to help you. Like, just go to treasurydirect.gov. Thank you. Okay. Now, our government did this. And you, dear students, can buy... Okay. Oh, okay. You can buy treasury bills at the same price that the big boys and girls in Wall Street buy them. Normally, when you buy these things, if you walk in with $1 million or $100 million, you're going to get a better price than somebody, $1,000, please. They come in $1,000 denominations, sometimes $5,000, $10,000. There's a seat right there. But no, you get to buy these things at the same price that everybody else, doesn't matter how much money they have. So this is a very cool thing. And so your assignment is to go through and research these things. Now, some people say, I can't find the quotes. I can't find the quotes. Sometimes you'll look, it'll say auctions. It'll auction results. Because they literally use an auction. They say, okay, we're going to be floating, you know, $5 billion in 3 month bills. What will you pay us? And the financial institutions and investors all around the world bid on what they will pay. And then at the end of that time, you would get more. You would buy them at a discount, and you would get more. Is that cool? Treasury dot. And what's really cool is Mexico copied it. They copied it with their CETES Direct, it's called. Let's go to the website. It's on the website. I should have just used it. Where is it? Here, CETES Directo, right. And I got to meet the project director. I actually got to meet the project director in Mexico City. He hasn't worked for the treasury anymore. He now works for a major bank. But he basically said, yeah, we just copied Treasury Direct. So you guys did a good job, so we copied it. So check it out. So you can, if you have pesos you want to invest, you get a better interest rate than the United States. So cool. Questions, thoughts? Okay, good. All right, good. That's pretty straightforward, I think. And when you're doing this assignment, the answers are not that important. The answers are not what we're after. What we're after is the experience of doing the research. Because this is what, in my humble opinion, prudent long-term investors need to do. You need to inform yourself. So many people will say, oh, I bought this stock. My buddy told me it was going to double in 8 months. I don't know what the name of the company is, but I do know the ticker symbol. You don't believe me, do you? I'm going to show you the video. This woman, that's how she decided what she was going to buy. And maybe it'll turn out for her. Didn't turn out for her. This one turned out easy. Anyway, you'll see later on. So just by doing this research, now you may find that, hey, this interests me. Or if I had, $100,000 that I needed for next year because we were going to buy a house, that's our down payment, you might decide, instead of going with a money market account or the money market mutual fund or a CD or something else, you might decide, hey, I want to buy treasury bills. Does that make sense? That's what we're after. The answers are really not as important as the process. Okay, I hope I'm not beating a dead horse. Now, CDs, certificates of deposit. Many people don't even know these things exist. And they go, what's that? CDs? No, I use DVDs now. No, not that CD. Go into your bank or your credit, and you look around, and you'll see a poster that says, check out our CD rates. And really all they are fancy savings accounts. But they're sometimes called time deposit accounts because you must leave the money on for a specified period, 7 days, 6 months, 5 years. What happens if you take the money out sooner? They're going to slap you on the wrist and take away your interest and maybe some more. Again, they're insured at the same $250,000 per investor per bank. So if you're really worried about that, you can have several banks and several accounts. And they can also be brokered. Huh? They can be sold by brokerage firms. Now, it's not backed by the brokerage firm. The broker is simply going as a go-between, which is what brokers do, and is hawking, is selling these CDs based on a certain credit union or a bank somewhere. Why would the bank bother to do that? They need cash. They want somebody to help them sell these things because they have to raise money to keep in good graces with the regulators. These things can be turned, you can turn around and sell them. You don't have to hold them on until maturity. Now, you have to be careful. Say you have a 6-month CD. What's going to happen if you don't tell the bank, I want my money at the end of 6 months?
They're going to reinvest it into a new CD.
They're going to roll it over. They're going to start the clock again at 6 months. And you have from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock on the second Tuesday of their, no, they give you 2 weeks. Okay, they give you 2 weeks. And what you can do is when you open the CD, you can say, look, when it matures, I want you to put it into my checking account, put it into my savings account. So just be careful about that. I'm not a big fan of CDs. I never have been. You can get pretty much the same rate from a money market account. But I have a friend, that's all she invests in. So there's an interview. You want to check it on the website. She knows, I'm a broker. She knows I teach this stuff. She doesn't listen to a single word I say. So I said, how about if we interview you about CDs? And so check it out if you're interested in it. She's just so even though her mother had given her stocks that had done well for over decades, she's still terrified and had nothing to do with it. I said, okay, what are you going to do? Okay, now here's a funny name, commercial paper. Isn't that a silly name? Well, when you're a major corporation, and you need money for the short term, 60 days, 90 days, you could go to a bank or you could go to the commercial paper market. And these are promissory notes. They're IOUs. Because you keep the maturity to less than 1 year, you don't have to go through the Securities and Exchange Commission and have these things registered. That's what we do with bonds, that's what we do with stocks. It's a big deal. Here, assuming that the investment world looks at you and says, okay, yeah, well you're Home Depot, we'll lend you $90 million for 3 months or a billion or whatever it is that you look for. Again, they're at the discount basis, so they're a lot like the treasury bills. But here's the kicker. How many of you have $100,000 lying around the house? They're usually sold in multiples of $100,000. So, hence, they're very, they're just, you don't see them that much. Why? Because if you walk into a brokerage firm and you say, you know, I'm interested in the quote on some corporate paper, their eyes are going to light up. They're going to figure you're worth millions of dollars and you have millions of dollars to invest, and they'll bring coffee and give you. And then when you realize, they realize you're doing it for a community college project, they're like, get out of here. Yeah, if you have this kind of money, usually you have a private broker or whatever. So it's going to be very difficult for you to find a quote on these things. It's not easy. They're not. It's just not published because it's just not for the average little guy or gal. And their cousins are called banker's acceptance notes. Now, these are the exact same thing, except the companies that are floating these things, they're not big enough to be recognized by the investment community. So they go to Wells Fargo or Bank of America or one of the major banks and say, look, we need $90 million. We're going to be buying a bunch of engines from Japan or whatever because we have to build these machines that need these engines. Will you lend us the money? So what the bankers will do is they will create these banker's acceptance notes on behalf of that company. They'll sell it, they get the proceeds, and then at the end of the 90 days, they have to pay the bank back. Are you with me? Understand? They're going to get a better interest rate than if they just go to the bank and borrow from the bank. Does that make any sense? Am I losing you on those things? You're not going to see these things advertised. Why? Because they come in $100,000 denominations. But they're popular with companies that you've probably never heard of, but they're doing a lot of business, but they're not big enough to sell corporate paper. Okay? All right. So, last one. Money market mutual funds. We briefly discussed mutual funds last week. We're going to start mutual funds in detail on Thursday. So these guys are mutual funds. They pool their money, the capital of a large number of investors, and use it to invest exclusively in short-term securities. So they, what do? They turn around and they buy corporate paper. They buy bankers' acceptance notes. They buy treasury bills. Because that's what they do. I mean, that they're not allowed to do anything else. They're not allowed to buy stocks or bonds or anything like that. In their prospectus, they said, we're going to invest only in high-quality short-term investments. They are not guaranteed. Unlike the money market deposit accounts at a bank or a credit union, because it's tied to the bank, these are not guaranteed. But what happens? What happens if they lose any money? The whole world jumps up and down and screams and hollers. In fact, all you have to do is look up the phrase, breaking the buck. And it probably doesn't make any sense right now, but it will if you read any of these articles. What happens is these things are basically kept at a dollar. And by keeping the share price at a dollar, when you buy and sell shares, it looks like you're putting money into a checking account, taking money out of a checking account. But they're not a checking account. They're not based on a bank or a credit union. So if their underlying securities lose value, it goes from a dollar down to 99 cents. And when that happens, the whole world jumps up and screams and hollers. It's only happened a few times. The last time it happened, 2008, one company made some really stupid maneuvers. You ever heard of Lehman Brothers? They're gone, right? And the fact that you can go back and read, there's lots of books, The Big Short, a bunch of books on the financial catastrophe. And the corporate paper that was associated with Lehman Brothers was almost worthless. So a couple of money market mutual funds in one company went from a dollar to 99 cents, and the other one went from a dollar to 97 cents. And the company went to the regulators, we're sorry, we goofed. And then the whole world exploded. That was September 2008 when the crisis really went into full gear. Now, normally, if the company is solvent, what they'll do is they'll go to the regulators and say, help us, will you allow us to take money out of our pocket and put it into the pockets of our investors? Because you're never allowed to do that. If anybody, a few people were interested in going into the business, right? More people in the online class. How many people are interested in going into the business? Only a few, yeah? Well, the first thing they tell you, never commingle funds. Never lend money to a client. Never take money from a client. You don't commingle your funds. But in this case, the regulators will say, oh, all right. And if they don't have the money, the other companies will come in and say, yeah, we'll take over the deposits. Well, in this case, people were so frightened that they started taking money out of these money market mutual funds. People just get frightened. I don't know if you remember a couple years ago, there was a Tijuana restaurant, a Chinese restaurant that was serving dogs. Remember that? And everybody in Tijuana and San Diego stopped going to Chinese restaurants. One restaurant was doing it. And so it doesn't matter. Stay away. And so who came to the rescue in this case? The Federal Reserve Bank. They said, look, don't worry. We will backstop all money market mutual funds. And by the way, people just call them money markets. We're the Federal Reserve Bank. We have a checkbook that is infinite. Well, almost. And if anything goes wrong, we'll make sure and make the depositors whole. They did that for 6 months, and they did it for another 6 months. And after, and at the end of 2009, they said, okay, it looks like the crisis has abated. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Cool?
I have a question.
Yeah. No, actually, Barclays. Barclays took over Lehman Brothers. Chase took over Washington Mutual, right? They took over Washington Mutual. Who took over Wachovia? That's another interesting case study. I forget who was going to take. I think it was Wells Fargo was going to take over Washington Mutual. And then over the weekend, all of a sudden the regulators, oh, no, Chase is going to do it. Chase is going to take over Washington Mutual. You wonder what the hell's going on in these cases. But then remember Wachovia? They're gone. Who else is gone? WaMu and Wachovia, they were the two biggies. But then a few other banks fell. And Bank of Armenia was basically, they said, you're buying Merrill Lynch, right? Oh, no, we're not. Yes, you are. Okay, we are. We're buying Merrill Lynch. And so far, you know, I thought Merrill Lynch was going to disappear, but they survived. So you wonder what held. So read. How many people read books in here? Books? You like books? You know, some people, the young folks, they will not read books. And I don't understand why, because books are so cool. The pictures are better. If you not graphic novels. I'm talking about the pictures in your head. How many people have read The Lord of the Rings? See, this is so sad. You've seen the movie, right? You didn't see the movie? Or read the book. Oh, that's sad. Read the book first. Read The Hobbit, then read The Lord of the Rings, then go see the movie. You love movies? How many movies have been better than the book? How many? That's not true. There's a few. Most people would say that the Godfather movie was better than the book, which was a trashy book. Yeah, Godfather. The book was horrible, but a great movie. Anybody ever see a movie called Being There? It's strange. It's really strange. And the book was strange. The movie was stranger, and it was better. It was really pretty good. But there's not too many, right? Not too many. Seat right over here in the corner. Come on in. There's a seat right there, right? Okay, right next there. Okay, so, dear students, now that you have, I forgot to write, I normally write them down as we go along, I apologize. Now that you have been shown the major choices for short-term investments, which is the best one for me? Well, commercial paper, banker's acceptance notes are usually suitable for institutional investors, people with a lot of money, savings bonds, make cute gifts for newborns. Many investors purchase treasury bills directly from the treasury. Very, very cool. And I guess CDs are okay, especially if you believe. CDs lock in your rate, right? And so if the interest rates you find are falling and you really need this money in 2 years or 3 years, you can lock in a good rate for 2 years. And some people don't like CDs because if they lock in the rate and if interest rates are rising, so they'll give you what's called a bump. Is that cute? It's a CD with a bump. Which means one or two times you can come in and say, you know what, I want you to bump up my rate to the current rate, and they'll let you do that. But I think most people, savvier investors, and I shouldn't use the word savvy, but I'm just saying people who've studied it, they're going to use money market mutual funds, money market deposit accounts. Every bank, every credit union, every brokerage firm, every mutual fund company offers them. But I've noticed that people who really have not done a good job, in my humble opinion, of investing and researching the options, still stick with savings accounts because they haven't taken this course yet. Cool? Okay, so emergency fund, real quick. Have you heard this? This is the darling of a lot of financial advisors. You should have an emergency fund of 3, 6, 9 months of income. Well, you know, I don't really agree with this. Not that I'm saying you should have $17.87 in your checking book at any time. You know, you should create some kind of reserve. But as long as you have access to cash, line of credit, home equity line of credit, credit cards in a real emergency, $25,000, $50,000 or more in a savings account, what are some of them paying still? 0.1%, 0.5%. You're going to find some of them paying 2% now. I think you should pay down credit card debt first, because you can always run the credit card debt back up, assuming you have the discipline not to run the credit card debt up just for fun, and you are adequately insured. Now, there are some exceptions. If you're in real estate, or you're in sales, you sell cars or whatever, or you have your own business, you need a bazooka emergency gun. You need a serious emergency fund. Bazooka emergency gun. You need an emergency fund that's really powerful, because what happens when interest rates go up, mortgage applications go down, you're a mortgage broker, you're a real estate agent, the phone stops ringing, and that might happen for 6 months or a year, right, or more. So you definitely, in that case, or you have a business, you need an emergency fund. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Okay, because I think they oversell this idea for many people. Okay, now, okay, got your ABCDs? So checking for comprehension, ABCD. What is a mutual fund that pools the capital of a large number of investors and uses it to invest exclusively in short-term? Need some ABCDs? Okay. B. Yeah, right. Money market mutual funds. You will not hear people say money market mutual funds. They'll just say money market, right? And their counterparts at banks and credit unions, money market demand accounts or money market accounts, they have rates that are close to CDs. They don't have the early withdrawal penalty. What are savings investments in which funds must remain on deposit for a specified period of time? There is normally a penalty for early withdrawal. Right, CDs. If interest rates are going down, you can lock in a great rate, but you better hope you don't need the money until the CD matures. I mean, they're just going to take your interest from you, penalty, oh well. What are short-term unsecured promissory notes, IOUs, that are issued by corporations with very high credit standing, normally sold in $100,000 denominations? Look at all those commercial papers, right? Commercial paper and their cousins, bankers' acceptance notes, are normally only purchased by institutional investors such as money market mutual funds. And then what is a guaranteed demand deposit at a bank or credit union that normally pays little interest but will be offered with a toaster or a waffle iron, which makes it all worthwhile? These are savings accounts. Comment. Okay, good. All right, excellent. Now, real quick. Oh, no, a couple things. All right, so look at the other side of the hand that we just looked at, the other assignment. Your other assignment is to... Do you have yours? Okay. Okay. My last one. So I'll bring it back, right? And if you need a three-ring binder, I got them. Come to my office. The assignment is to go out and find some rates. Now, you know, it's like who can find the best rate? If you go to bankrate.com or what's the other one, iMoney something or other, you'll find some of the best rates in the country. Because a bank that's chartered by the United States National Association, it's called, or a credit union, you don't have to worry if it's in Podunk, PA, or Idaho or someplace like that. No matter where the bank is, as long as it's in the United States, I think Puerto Rico too, you're covered. You're covered if it goes in trouble. So go ahead, find the best rates you can on CDs, on the money market, mutual funds. Now, there's two different types of money market mutual funds. We'll discuss money markets in more detail. But there are taxable and non-taxable. Non-taxable are going to be cheap. They're not going to pay as well. And then the Treasury, treasurydirect.gov. The last two are the ones I was telling you about. You walk into a brokerage firm and you ask, oh, do you have any quotes on corporate rates, corporate paper? Get out of here. So that's their bonus, if you can find those. They're harder to find. Sometimes you can find them on major corporations' websites. Go to investor relations or investors. But let's take a look at some of them. Let's take a look at now. These are old quotes. So where is it? What's the matching security? We'll do that. I'll do that on, if we have time, we'll do that. Where is it? Here, short-term examples. Okay. This is a, now this is going to be a little confusing. Okay. These are all short-term securities. These are Bank of Montreal. They might be corporate paper. They might be bankers' acceptance notes. We don't know. But they might be corporate paper based on the bank, or they might be bankers' acceptance notes. But BlackRock, Federal Home Loan Bank, Fidelity Institutional Money Market Funds. What are these things? Sumitomo, Swedish Bank, Toronto Dominion Bank, U.S. Treasury bills. These are all short-term corporate paper or banker's acceptance notes. And so this company is a mutual fund company. And a mutual fund, which we'll discuss in more detail next session, is like anybody. They need to have short-term cash lying around the house just in case whatever they have redemptions or whatever. So in this case, this mutual fund had normally, this is a stock mutual fund, by the way, they had 11% of their assets in short-term securities. That's unusual. Most mutual funds, when they're investing in stocks, they want to be, you know, pretty much fully invested, because if they're not, the stock market's going up, they'll lose out. Of course, if they have a lot of money in cash and the market falls down, that gives them an opportunity to buy more shares at a lower price. So it's a balancing act. But notice that as of this day, September 30th, 2018, these either bankers' acceptance notes or corporate paper were paying anywhere between 2.17 and 2.24. You're going to find, if you find them, it's going to be higher. Why? Because the Federal Reserve Bank raised rates in December. So you're going to see it might be like 0.25% higher. And there are various ones that were due between November 7th and November 27th. So these things are already gone. Right? They've already matured. They're gone. The value on that date was $164,457, actually multiplied by 1,000, three more zeros, so $164 million. When they mature, this mutual fund is going to receive $165 million. Now, they don't have to hold on to the maturity. They can turn around and sell them because they're marketable security. What? Times 1,000, yeah. $165 million. Because there's three zeros after that. You see, it says three zeros. So these are just, they don't get too large. So, yeah, the numbers get big. This mutual fund, by the way, is some $90 million, something like that. So, $60 billion of security. So you see what's going on here? At that day, well, this one, this is probably maturing on that date. The value is $30,000. Or, you know, because there might be like 29,999,950 or whatever. But here, this one you can see. 223,810, 225. At that day, it was worth 223,810,000. When they mature, 225 million. Questions? Make sense? Okay, so I'm going to ask you to see if you can find it. And it's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. But if you go to a major corporation's website and check out investor relations, you might find it. Okay, what are we doing? Not bad. All right, so back to the presentation. Da, 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 da. The Fed. Yes, sir.
So do you see similar percentage yield investing in money market
accounts? Yeah, you should see a little bit less than that.
Well,
yeah, because they have that. Right. You should see. Go check out the money. I'm going to ask you to do it. Check out money market rates. You should be seeing around 2%. I haven't checked it lately, but if couple months ago, they were a little less than 2%. But remember, the Federal Reserve, who controls short-term interest rates? The Federal Reserve Bank. They are the banker's bank. And you hear people say, get rid of the Fed, they're brokers, they're banksters. They call them banksters. This is nothing new, folks. Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson were fighting with the banks 200 years ago. So nothing's perfect. And yes, there are problems with the Fed, in my humble opinion. But they have a very difficult task. Their job is twofold. They are trying to keep the economy fully employed. Right? People working, making their payments, buying the food, clothing and shelter, and internet access. And they're supposed to keep inflation in check at the same time. So those are two diametrically opposed. You want to give people a whole lot of money, then there's too much, you hear the economists say, too much dollars, too many dollars chasing too few goods. And that can create inflation. So they have a balancing act. And they don't always do a good job. Folks, I'd like to see us do a better job, is what some people say. And they're jerks. You want to do a better job? So the Fed was designed to be independent and not subject to political pressures. Have you been following? Actually, he's shut up for the last few weeks. He's on his wall now. But for a while there, every day, our Agent Orange was attacking Federal Reserve and saying, they're the problem. When the stock market goes up, it's all because of me. When the stock market goes down, it's somebody else's fault. Okay, good. Okay, so remember, who sets Fed short-term interest rates? Do they always do a great job? Oh, well. But if they are right, if the economy is improving the way they believe it's improving, they've been raising interest rates, and if they're right, that's a good sign for the next 3 to 5 years. Maybe we'll see. We'll know. We'll know in 3 to 5 years. Okay, so that is it, folks. We've done the introduction to investments, overview of investment universe, the brief history of risk and return, and then short-term investments. Get them out of the way because they're only good when you need them for the short term. Now, anybody still awake? Okay, anybody got a good joke? All right, so where are we? Where is this? Okay, turn to page 6. Page 6. Okay. Because what we're going to do now, this is something that you can do on your own, and I'm not going to require you to do it. I don't like it personally, myself. I think it's something that you shouldn't do. You shouldn't look at your results over 3-4 months or so. But, we don't have 3-4 months. And it's part of the requirements of the course. And I know other people teach this, they sort of make it into a horse race, and at the end of the semester they give the person who had the best return a T-shirt or something like that. But what we're going to do is we're going to use stocks. You don't have to use stocks. You can use bonds. You can keep money in cash if you think the market's going down. Some places have you do shorting, which we don't even want you to know about until the end of the semester. But let's pick 10 stocks. Now, what we're going to do is take a look at how last... You're going to see it's not easy, folks. Let's sign in. And I use Yahoo, which is actually getting worse and worse by the day, which is sad. But it's still not a bad website for those of you who want to track stocks. We'll discuss all the different things about stocks in a bit. But let's see how well last... No, I don't want you to do it. Okay, where's my... Here it is. Here's the fall. Here's the fall semester. How did we do? Ooh, we lost. There it is, performance. So we made a big bet on FedEx and Anheuser-Busch and Apple. So we started... where is it? We started with $100,000, and we're not the only ones that are down around 8, 9, 10%. But other classes have done better. And the investment club, anybody interested in the investment club? I'll remind you on how they do. How did the investment club do? They've done better. Not only down a little over 4%. So we're going to choose 10 stocks. How's that? Is that cool? We're going to choose 10 stocks. We'll go back to the very beginning of the semester. And so write these down. And then we'll by Thursday, I'll have them up on the screen. Now, You can do this, folks. You can create a Yahoo account. Google used to have it, but not anymore. MarketWatch, Big Charts. There's a bunch of websites that allow you to create your own portfolio and track it. But it's not real money, so don't worry about it. What stocks do you want? Anybody? Who wants Carlos? What do you want? Carlos. AMD. Were you the one who pushed AMD last semester?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're still.
Well,
you're
not last semester in the club.
In the club. In the club. Yeah, yeah. In the club. They did really well, didn't they?
Well, and then, I bought in at $2.
And then they crashed and burned. So AMD. So notice we're going to learn how to do this. You type in the ticker symbol. If you know the ticker symbol, well, take AMD. Is the name of the company. That's the ticker, so that's really easy. But say you, we'll look at it one of the other ones. So AMD, and so we're going to, throughout the semester, relax, don't know, what do all these numbers mean? What is this? What is going on here? Relax, we're going to learn about these as we go along, what these numbers, some of them you don't really need to worry about too much, others are very important. So AMD is currently selling for $23.18. Now, who are they? Do you use their products?
Yeah.
Maybe you do. Open up your laptop. Does it say Intel inside? Well, if it does, you're using their competitor's product. That's their big competitor is Intel. But if it says AMD on a little sticker there somewhere, or maybe it doesn't say that, you have to look on the documentation, that they're the ones that make the brains, the microprocessors that go into computers and other devices. And so what's going on here? What is it? P.E., price to earnings rate. What is that? Well, we're going to spend a lot of time on P.E., but whenever that number gets above 20, 25, that means that investors are really excited about the future. Could mean a few other things, but mostly it means that investors are excited about the future. Typically, 15 to 20 is normal, but we're not in normal times these days. Are investors really excited about the future? Yeah. Yahoo has taken a survey of analysts who believe that next year AMD is going to be worth $23.66. Are they excited about AMD's future, the analysts? No. And what do these mean, and what does that mean? We'll discuss those later on. But do you want... So what's going on in the PC market? Are more computers being sold or less? Fewer. PC market's shrinking, right? Now there's a... Well, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say AMD knows that and expanded already to mobile markets.
They're moving into the mobile market. So it's Intel, so what's the other one company?
Qualcomm.
Qualcomm, and then...
Samsung.
And what's the UK company that... I can never remember their name. Advanced Micro Devices? No, that's them. That's AMD. Advanced Micro. I can't remember the ARM. Advanced. What does ARM stand for?
That's
no good. ARM. ARM is another one. See, ARM, and now Samsung and Qualcomm, they started from the bottom up. They started making microprocessors for mobile devices, and now mobile devices sell more than PCs. So, who wants to invest in AMD? Only Carlos. You guys got to be committal. Who doesn't want to invest in AMD? Should we look at their competitor?
Yes.
Should we look at Intel? Let's go look at Intel. All right, Carlos. you nailed it. Last year, we bought it, and it just skyrocketed. But lately, it's been pretty... why did you put you said at 2? You bought it at 2. See, he should be teaching the class. Intel selling for $49.96. And what's their P.E.? Are investors excited about Intel? What do the analysts say? In a year, they think it's, well, not that much. It's 40, no, it's 50. Yeah, it's 10%. Not bad. Not even, though, it's 15%. No, I can't think. 10% would be $5. So, yeah, 6% or so. Do you want to buy Intel? Who wants to buy Intel? Who doesn't want to buy Intel? Come on, you got to vote. Okay? It's not real money, and we got to get through this by 10 o'clock. Okay, we got 10 more to go. Who wants to buy Intel? Who doesn't want to buy Intel? Ooh, that was, let's count. Who wants to buy Intel? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22. Who doesn't want to buy Intel? Ooh, this is it. Maybe we should buy both. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. All right, we're going to buy Intel. Okay, we're going to buy Intel. I'm sorry. That was a bit of a divisive one. It what are you talking about? It's volatile. You want to? It's okay. We don't have to invest all of it, but I like to. I like to watch it bounce up and down, scare you. Okay. What else? Who else? What do you want to buy?
Alibaba.
Baba. Now, who is Baba? Who is Alibaba?
The Chinese Amazon.
That's what people call them. The Chinese Amazon. They're similar, but they don't have the same. Maybe they do. I don't know. But if you don't, I know the symbol is Baba. But it's if we start typing Alibaba, Alibaba, it says, "Oh, you want Baba?" Now, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Question.
I was just gonna say I would recommend just everybody to Qualcomm.
Okay. Well, hang on a minute. We'll put that on. Hang on a minute. We'll take a look at Qualcomm in a second.
Well, because during our class, during this semester, the Galaxy S10 and their whole line is going to be...
Okay, hang on. Okay, we'll come back to Qualcomm. Just hang on a minute. Don't worry. Okay. Now, what is their P.E. rate? So, investors are excited. What's the year target? What does Baba do?
Online provider.
It's a lot like Amazon, an online provider of goods and services. I don't know that they have the same money making from the web services. Amazon makes a ton of money from web services. Anybody using Canvas in here? Anybody using Canvas? You're using Amazon. Canvas uses Amazon's web services. But now, when you invest in Baba, are you really investing in a Chinese corporation?
No.
No. What are you investing in?
Someone's stocks that they bought from China and bought them over here.
Bermuda or someplace, right? There's somewhere. What they did, they said, okay, you can't. China said you foreigners, you can't invest in our markets. We're not allowed. There are some people who are allowed to invest in mutual funds and the like, but you can't. So what Baba did is they went over to Bermuda or Bahamas or one of those places that starts with B in the middle of the Caribbean, and they opened up a corporation, and that corporation has a claim to any dividends that the Chinese company Alibaba produces. So you're not buying Alibaba. You're buying another company that has a claim on their dividends. Now, what do you think of that? You think that's a good idea?
No, not really. Isn't that going to diminish your return?
Well, I don't know. It depends. It depends on how many dividends they start paying. Or it depends on the trade war. If it gets really ugly and a Chinese judge says, forget it, this contract is no good in China. So Baba doesn't have to pay a single dime to that corporation as a claim on all their dividends in the future. It could get ugly, folks. It could get ugly. Especially with Pinche Trump. If he believes that he's in trouble.
It's also the opposite, right? If you get a trade agreement, that's what everybody's...
That's what people are hoping for, aren't they? They're going, please, would you guys start acting like grown-ups, please? Let's hope. So who wants to buy Baba? Okay, come on, raise them high, come on! Who doesn't want to buy Baba? No, I think we're buying Baba. Okay, we're buying Baba. It's already up there. All right, so now, if we want volatility, we're going to get it. Okay, Qualcomm. What do they make? What does Qualcomm make? No, somebody else makes them for them. They design them, and their name is on them, but they don't even make them. Somebody else makes them for them. But if you have a Verizon or a Sprint phone, you are using the system that they created called CDMA. Have you heard of CDMA? Stands for can't do much anything. No, code division multiple access. I'm sorry, go ahead.
They also do their chipsets for GSM too.
They now do them? They do them? But they didn't design it.
No, No, but they have their own. Like, I used to work at AT&T.
Okay.
I'm telling you, like, every phone you would open up would have the little sticker, Qualcomm GSM or Qualcomm.
Okay. So, GSM is the other system that was designed by Nokia that AT&T and T-Mobile uses. Okay, so let's take a look. Now, do we know this stuff? They're very popular in cell phones. They're Snapdragon. So we can type Qualcomm, and that's not the one we want. Oh, Q, there it is. Qualcomm. And it's all uppercase, which drives me up a wall. But I don't usually write it that way, but Qualcomm. So they're based here in San Diego. Yeah? Where do they make most of their money? Overseas, right? So, hey. And what's the PE? Pretty high, but by today's standards, not really. Are the analysts excited about Qualcomm? And look at what they're paying in dividends. We'll discuss dividends. Dividends don't lie. Dividends are cool.
Isn't that like a 34% on investment?
34? No, it's actually, if we buy this stock for $50.64, every year they're going to pay us $2.48. If we take $2.48 and divide it by 50, we're going to do this when we get to chapter 5. $50.64, it turns out to be about 5%. The analysts are excited. The analysts are saying next year we expect Qualcomm to be $67. If it's not that, are they in trouble? Yeah. I made bad mistakes before. Okay, who wants to buy Qualcomm? Oh, it looks like a winner. All right. Okay, we got Tech. There are other companies besides tech. Okay, wait a minute. Back here in the cheap seats. I'll get back to you, Kathleen. It's a gas station?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. What's it called?
Q-U-I-K.
No, I think I've heard of these. Please. Quick Trip. Are you sure they're... They might not be public. Yeah.
Are you okay with...
Quick Logic. No, I don't think we own Quick Logic.
What, cannabis companies?
Cannabis companies.
There you go.
Hang on. Okay. Do we want volatility? I guess so. Hang on a minute. Let's go to Kathleen first. Check. Get your cell phone. Check them out. See if you can find their website. Go. You know what? It's real easy. If it doesn't show up, it's probably not public. But it doesn't mean it isn't. Go to the company's website. If you see it along the menu, see Investor Relations. That means they're probably public. Okay. What did you want? $5.
Starbucks.
$4.
What is
it? Charbucks. I heard people call it Charbucks because they overcooked their coffee. I know the symbol. It's S-Bucks. But you could just start typing in Starbucks. And there we go. Starbucks. And so, $68.94, almost $67. And the analysts are saying, it's probably not going to go up that much. PE is a little high, paying 2%, not bad. What do you think of Starbucks?
It's not likely to fall.
Safe? You think it's safe? Well, actually, drugs do well in a recession. They do. Drug companies and drugs like cigarettes. Well, caffeine is a drug. People don't believe you when you say that. No, it's a drug. Go look up Excedrin. Look up Excedrin, and you'll see the active ingredients, and one of them is caffeine. One of the most powerful drugs out there for migraines is called Cafragot. And they don't use it anymore. It's really powerful. And it's caffeine and ergots. You lose 1,000 of them, and you're a pharmacist, no problem. You lose one pill of oxycodone, you're in trouble. But if you take enough Cafragot, your toes will fall off. So caffeine is a drug, if you don't believe me. Do we want to invest in drug companies?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, especially legal drug companies. Who wants Starbucks?
Wait, can cannabis companies be public if they're not legal?
In Canada. They're based in Canada. Oh. So we got Starbucks. Let's put down Starbucks. Is there one here that's...
I'm not sure if that's publicly public.
I doubt if it's public. Let's try it. I think the mutual fund is investing in companies that are based in Canada.
Yeah, MJ and
Fonda. You know, what is it called? MedMen?
Yeah.
No, it's not there. You know, think about how much beer is advertised, and spirits and wine. Marijuana is going to sell a hell of a lot more than those. So there's going to be tremendous money made. But in the meantime, you could go to jail. All those dispensaries, the feds could swoop in at any time. It's already on the books. They're breaking federal law. Those people could invest in whatever they're investing, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars. They could go to jail. So it scares the living daylights out of me.
I have money in canopy growth. And they just got
okay, whatever it is. Canopy, how do you say? Canopy? It's on the New York Stock. See, the New York Stock Exchange, they must feel it's going to be legal soon.
Well, Constellation Brands, which owns Corona Beer, just gave them $4 billion.
So, what's the P.E. ratio?
They don't have one right now.
Why?
It's annoying.
They're losing money, right? They're taking everything they got and they're throwing it into the company. And what is it? So, buy it, right? So, do you understand what you're getting yourself into?
Yes.
This is John Merriweather. Okay, this is a trader's investment. It's not in the trader's not investment. It's a speculation, and it could, you know, Constellation's. They're a big company, and I think who just invested in Juul, which is
Kronos. Yeah. I believe is the one that got Altria, which is
Altria, bit fake cigarette. Yeah. So, if we really want volatility, do we want to invest in canopy? Yeah. How many people want to invest in canopy? Yeah. Oh boy, okay. I can tell my boss. I want to buy some canopy stock. He'll look at me. Yeah. What? Yeah. What's the symbol? CGC? Okay. So, wait, how many do we have? Five. We need five more. Yes. PGE? Are you serious? You guys are. What did it sell for, like 12 cents? No, it came back, didn't it?
And then the town on fire.
Pacific.
The whole town they burned down.
Well, they didn't burn them down.
They're liable.
They're liable, yeah. Okay, so now what is it? So this one or this one? What are the? I don't know enough about these. Oh, these are options, aren't they? I don't know. Can we invest in this? Here it is, PCG. I'm sorry, PCG. Here it is. Oh, they're back up. Let's see what happened in the last 6 months. Oh, they're back up. They were down to $6-$7. Okay, now why is who's it, your name again? Sorry,
Marco.
Why is Marco saying we should invest in this company? Because they're bankrupt. The claims against the company now far exceed what the company could ever pay. Are we going to allow a utility to go under?
Yeah.
No, because people don't like taking cold showers in the dark, right? So investors are saying, no, you're going to, they're going to survive. So obviously, again, it's another speculation. We don't know how it's going to work. We don't know that how they're going to deal with this issue. So do you... It could turn out really badly for us. The stock investors could get wiped out. I doubt it. I don't think they will, but it doesn't mean I'm right.
Wasn't utilities pretty, something you don't really want to put a lot of money into, utility companies?
Well, utility companies are very stable. They're not going anywhere, right? In this case, we have a situation. Oh, my God, we only have a few minutes left. I'm sorry. You're telling me that it's a five-minute rule. Who wants to invest in this guy? Okay, let's
try. Yeah.
How
about a pharmaceutical?
We have Starbucks. Pharmaceutical. How about something boring? Who?
Roku.
That's another tech. You guys can think of something in tech? Yes.
Microsoft.
Enso, another tech.
Parvana.
Nike. How about Nike? Oh, you can't. No, you can't invest in Mars. That's a private company.
Valero.
Yeah, we'll do Valero. VLO, is it? Valero? VLO? Okay, what else? Boeing! That's a, not really a tech company.
Netflix.
It's a VA. And who? Netflix.
Raytheon.
How about something boring? How about
Wells Fargo.
Coca-Cola. Yeah, we're going to do Coca-Cola. And then we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
PRI.
Who's that?
PRI?
Public Radio International? PRI. Oh, Primerica! Primerica.
No.
Yes. How about Wells Fargo?
HSBC.
We have 10? Oh, I'm sorry. I counted wrong. Yes, 6, 4. We have 10. Okay, we're done. Okay. Okay. So we'll be tracking these stocks, and don't worry, we'll be ready for some volatility. And so you can do this. Now, if you fumble around on different websites and you're having trouble, come see me. I'll help you how to do it. It's not that hard. Create an account and then look for StockTrack. All right, so Thursday, you don't want to miss Thursday because we start very important mutual funds. Yes. So see you Thursday.